This is the Motion Martial Arts Podcast. On today's episode, we have guest Tim Klein, a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu brown belt, and we discuss the realities of changing schools. Thank you.
Hey, what's up? So today
what's up, Dave?
I'm flying solo. This is Dave. We're in the middle of coronavirus 2020, so everybody's on isolation. So Dan and I are not together, and I'm connecting with my longtime friend of like 20, 25 years or something like along those lines, Tim Klein, who's based in Phoenix, Arizona. And yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about the process of changing schools, which is an interesting process. So Tim, you want to jump in a little bit and tell everybody about your training experience with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu?
Sure. So I am a 10th planet brown belt under John Bateo here at 10th planet Phoenix. I've been training for 8 years now, maybe even nine. I don't even know. You kind of lose track after all the time, but
it's got to be more than that, man.
All right. Well, we'll just say nine. We'll say 9 years, maybe 9 years plus. I'm an active competitor. I try to get my feet wet in teaching too. It was kind of one of the things I looked at when I joined John's Academy was all the options for how to grow my jiu-jitsu career and become the best competitor and teacher and all around person as I could be. I've been with John for 7+ years after moving here to Phoenix and kind of jumping around to a bunch of gyms.
All right. So, let's just kind of jump into the conversation. So I guess you and I, the school will remain nameless and the instructor will remain nameless. But you and I tried to do jiu-jitsu, I think, for the first time in 2009. And I don't even know how many classes we did, but I remember we got like an email like a day after the first class, which was like, hey, there's a ringworm outbreak. The school's shut down for 2 weeks. Check yourself for a ringworm. And at the time I didn't have health insurance because I was a touring musician. And I look back and what's crazy, man, is I was getting heel hooked day number one too there at that place. But that's a different conversation. So we tried it. I think it was 2009. I could have the year wrong. It was 2008 or 2009. And then you eventually started training with Rob Schreier, who's kind of like the man. He's just a freaking monster, man. He's one of the best practitioners and coaches and teachers, instructors that you'll find. And he's kind of like not really in the grand schemes of things that well known. So you started training there. And you started before me, and I eventually started training with where I ended up with underneath Alberto Rubio. But yeah, I guess let's start with that. So you found Rob, which I don't know if you had sort of did research or you just kind of lucked out and walked into a school with this monster who's absolutely freaking incredible. You there, Tim?
Hold on. Can you hear me now? Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you right now.
Dave? Yeah. That was very unprofessional. No, I turned the screen off my phone. My bad. I got super lucky. My cousin who I was living with at the time, he all throughout his childhood into middle school and high school, I was going to the gym lifting a lot of weights, and he's like, hey, you want to try jiu-jitsu? And I was like, I've been waiting to go with somebody for a while. I was telling him how me and my buddy Dave, started a couple of years ago, did a couple of classes and it just didn't work out. He had to get health insurance before we did anything, too risky, but I was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's go try one. And so, we selected two schools to take a look at. One was Precision with Rob and the other was a Gracie affiliate that was a little farther from our school. I think it was like a Henzo Gracie affiliate. And I mean, even though Rob is from the Henzo Gracie lineage under Ricardo Almeida, You know, we kind of walked into a super close. So we were like, this seems like a perfect spot. And we just lucked out. I didn't want to leave the gym, day one. But Rob is, I mean, I love Rob. I love the Precision family. I still consider them my family because everyone's so tight there. And everyone, helps each other get better every day, in addition to the fact that they're just straight killers there. So in addition to everyone, trying to get good and murder each other at the same time, they support each other, on and off the mats. And I got super lucky to learn from Rob, Big Rob, Rob Shire, Rob Greenwich, Pete now, who has his own school, and they have a whole ton of black belts at that academy now. It always makes me wonder what my jiu-jitsu would be like if I never left. My game would have been completely different, but where it is now is actually completely different where it would have been too. Just amount of high level practitioners that come out of that school, it amazes me. And so every time I go back to Philly to visit family, I always make sure I get in at least a couple of days training with Rob. I just get my ass kicked. I mean, part of it is because I don't wear, but it's always good to. But there's levels to the game, and Rob and some of the guys there are high. They're high level guys.
Yeah. I mean, I pretty much, for the most part, I only peek, pop by when you're around, but every once in a while. So I got a pretty good relationship with Dylan, who trains there, Dylan Royce. He's a monster too. Obviously he's a black belt. if you guys have been to any of the Philly Fight to Wins, you've seen him. He's an absolute beast. I've connected with him. Rob is always super welcoming. I've stopped in a little bit, but I'm always been just overwhelmingly impressed, with that school and the instruction that comes out of there, and everybody's so friendly and that, it's just one of those schools where, you're going to always get tough round after tough round, but everybody's going to be like you beat the crap out of each other, and people are going to get up and smile and give a hug to each other afterwards, no matter how intense the role is. It's just such a great vibe and environment there. So there you were pretty much training in the gi, right?
Yeah.
Exclusively.
Yeah. I mean, when I first started there, it was pretty much all gi all the time. There was a no gi class that was very small, was mostly wrestlers. And considering I had zero experience wrestling, and I was still trying to lift weights on top of jiu-jitsu, I just didn't have a whole lot of time. But eventually, as I kind of got my feet wet, and you kind of the wall, and you kind of crawl, you jump over it, and you kind of start to think out. I started going to the no-gi class and realized there's a world. You don't have those handles. Or wrestling at that point, which I had none of anyway. So it was like I was getting my butt kicked again, a day one, or not knowing what to do. And eventually, you figure it out. And, the more you train without the gi, you realize it's a tool. But, there's certain techniques that work, and you really work on your clinching, and your offense and defense, your techniques change a little bit, and you kind of realize where the finer things are and where you need to work on control or escapes or whatnot. So it was, for me, and I remember there was one point where Rob asked in class, and I had already started going to the no-gi class already, but he announced during the gi class, he said, "All right, no one's getting promoted anymore unless you start coming to no-gi class too." Because he knew the importance of it. A lot of the guys, dabbled a little bit with throwing the gloves on and doing some cage work too. So, he realized the importance of it and wanted to have us to be all well-rounded. And, it helped shape where I wanted to take my jiu-jitsu, in the future to where I am now, and realize the no-gi aspect as well.
So to move along, which is kind of the main point of this conversation. So you decide to relocate to Phoenix, Arizona, and there is actually probably more jiu-jitsu in Phoenix than there is in the greater Philadelphia area. You can confirm that, but that's my understanding.
There's a ton, and it's growing. It is growing like crazy. It was funny. I distinctly remember when we decided to move, my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, we decided to to move to Phoenix. I had a buddy who lived here. Her sister lived here. And the company I work for had, you know, huge office here where there's, you know, some more opportunity for me to advance my career. I remember, and we kind of decided to move to Phoenix just for a change. We'd both grown up she was from Jersey. We're from Philly, and it was just time to, you know, make a change and do something different and get out of the, you know, the harsh winters we were having those last couple of years. But I remember, you know, talking to Rob, and I was like, you know, a little, you know, distressed a little bit about it. I was like, Rob, man, I got to talk to you. He's like, oh shit. He's like, oh shit. What's going on? What's wrong? I was like, listen, we're going to move to what? Why? And I felt like I was breaking up with my girlfriend. I had such a bad feeling about it. And, you know, Rob being the kind of guy he is, he's like, all right. He's like, that's cool. I get it. You know, he's like, and he told me, he's like, they always come back. If you're from the Northeast, he's like, you always come back later. It's funny. I told him a couple of weeks before we decided to pack up and go. And he, you know, the next day in class, or, you know, we were bullshitting. He's like, hey, listen, he's like, I looked up a couple spots you should check out, you know, before you make a decision where you want to train. He's like, you know, you'll probably be better. You know, you'll want to go towards a traditional jiu-jitsu school, not, you know, an MMA school. But he said, you don't find anything you like, you know, send me a video of doing some techniques or whatever, if you want to help you out or whatever. So he's even been there, you know, willing to offer his services regardless if I was a student or not. You know, he just loves jiu-jitsu so much, and that kind of helps, you know, me or two that I had such support, you know, had his support in making this transition. But when I got to Phoenix, it was tough. I was really, I told my wife, I said, the only important thing for me is that I still train jiu-jitsu. I don't care what I do for work. I don't care where we live. I just want to still do jiu-jitsu. And I was bouncing around a lot of schools and was the right fit, because I wanted to still be, you know, at Precision with Rob. And I was bouncing around, and I was like, you know, maybe we move somewhere else. Maybe this isn't the spot for us. And, you know, I didn't exactly get to a job is where I wanted to be, so it didn't really matter. But I trained a little bit with the Gustavo Dantas, a little bit with the Power MMA. There's a Gracie affiliate here, a Helsin affiliate here, and they're all, you know, different schools, different things, but it just wasn't the right fit for me. So some were lacking either the hard rounds that I wanted, and, you know, the no-gi classes that I, some people weren't training, were more training IBJJF style. So, you know, it was just not the right combination. And when I eventually found John, it was different. The culture was the perfect fit. They had hard rounds. Guys were super friendly, and it was like a new jiu-jitsu. And I didn't know a whole lot about 10th Planet at that point. Like, EBI wasn't a big thing, so, you know, Eddie wasn't really hadn't grown the system to where it is now, you know, 7-8 years later. But I remember I was training at another school doing gi at this school, and then going to John, you know, 3 days a week to do no gi. And the way I recall it is that, you know, I felt like I was cheating on, kind of, I mean, it, because, you know, my wife was the, you know, the gi school I was going to, but then, you know, my mistress, you know, being 10th Planet, and John was teaching me all these tricks that, you know, are sometimes frowned upon, but then I would go and use them in the gi, and it didn't feel good. So I knew I had to make a decision, and I knew what the decision was. I mean, I didn't really want to drop the gi yet, but because, you know, I still felt like it was a tool. But it was clear that I had to, you know, stick with John. And John's one of those, he's an OG, man. He was with the start, you know, he really started with Eddie. when Eddie was coming up, but he has a lot of experience outside of that. Before he started training with Eddie in LA, he was with Fabio Santos in California. And before that, he had trained a little bit with Helsin in Hawaii. So he has that old school experience too, in addition to being, you know, a huge thing from Eddie. So what really brought the fact that he was so open to showing me all these cool tricks, and I was getting my ass kicked like every day with these moves. I had no idea what they were. So it was a good compliment to Rob's style, which was this, you know, heavy pressure game. You pass, you get to a good position, you submit, versus, you know, John's game, you know, 10th planet stuff is, you know, being on the bottom. He's the traditional 10th planet guy. So, you know, a lot of lockdown, playing the truck, a lot of rubber guard. So it complemented what experience I had and kind of brought me to this different level.
So yeah, I think one of the main things to take away from everything you're saying is the kind of this idea of when you're looking for a school, whether you're searching for your school at first or you're searching for a new school, is finding the people that you fit with the best, which is important. Not just hopping into any school and being like, because I think that's one of the main reasons why people quit, is they pick a school that, like, they're like, well, I just want to train and it's not a good fit. Or they start looking for a new school and the fit's not right. And then they just kind of are like, I'm done. I give up.
Yeah.
Going back a little bit into John. So I could be wrong with this, but is John like, did he open like the first 10th Planet affiliate school period or something like that? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was, there's debate. I think there may have been one in somewhere in Texas. I don't know, sure, but even if it was, it never made it. So John was really the first affiliate. It was even before Ed even thought about having, you know, franchises and having all these ones around the world, literally. So John was the first to do it. So I think he had asked John had asked Eddie multiple times, as the story has been told to me, about doing it. Because John was at this point in his life where he had left the Navy, and he wasn't sure what he wanted to do, but he knew he loved jiu-jitsu. So he knew that he was going to couldn't stay out in LA. And he was going to move into Texas and was going to move to Arizona, where his sister was. And he decided, you know, kept bugging Eddie, hey, let me open an affiliate, let me teach, let me spread the system and whatnot. And eventually he got the green light. And, he hit the ground running. You know, he took a huge leap because he had nothing. He got a couple investors, got some mat space at a local, you know, gym, and started growing. And now he's got a huge facility. We got, a workout space, and he's living the life.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of, his story is a little bit similar to Alberto's story, which is, so Alberto was he was based in Colombia and was pretty much, there was no jiu-jitsu in Colombia. And then started coming up on trips to Florida, learning a little bit from the Valenche brothers. Then he moved to Australia. And I know in Australia for a little bit, he was training with Roberto Travin, who is a world champion, ADCC champion, who has a school in Atlanta. But at the time he was in Australia. Then Alberto eventually moved to Gracie Baja, and then he moved to California and teamed up with at the Gracie Academy with Huron and Henner and Horry and Gracie. But Alberto was like one of the first, actually he might be still one of the only a couple guys who actually taught at the Gracie Academy who opened up their own school. So you have kind of like the Balance guys did it, Alberto did it. Those are actually the only guys I know off the top of my head that actually like were at the Gracie Academy and then did their own school. For the most part, it's people that bought into the franchise who never actually spent time teaching or working at the Man Academy. But going back more to stuff with you and John and stuff like that. So I'm going to butcher his name, but it's Kyle Bame, right? Is that how Bame. You say his name?
Kyle Bame is right.
Yeah. So he's trained a lot out of 10th Planet Phoenix. He's a monster. So you guys can easily find him. How's his last name spelled? It's Boehm.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You guys can look him up. He's very, very, very successful competitor. So what's it like training with him, and what kind of just the whole experience having a training partner who's that high level? Because I mean, he's made waves in the sort of no gi submission only world.
Yeah, so I mean, when Kyle came to us, he's a beast now, but he was a beast. MMA fights, I know, and he I don't think he had any wrestling experience, but he is an avid rock climber. So he's strong. He's just super strong. He's super long. And I remember, like, when he first came to us, you know, I was having some problems with him, but I would always, you know, stay on top of him. I could sweep him, no problem. I'd hop on his back because he just didn't know much, but he just engulfed himself in jiu-jitsu. And he was able to, you know, within a month or so, he was already beating me, and I was, and I felt he's just a monster, and he excelled at it. So to have a guy like Kyle to train with, he's super smart too, so, and super technical to where, you know, he'll smash something up and it's his then, you know, whether it's a leg, an arm, or a neck or whatever. So he's super legit. It's nice to see him grow to this kind of the status he's at now, to where he's winning these big competitions and he's on the main stage, and he's, you know, he can do jiu-jitsu professionally now. I remember the first, we'd seen him compete at like Nagas before, and he's always smashed dudes. But the one thing that stands out in my mind is I remember it was my first Gracie Nationals or Gracie Worlds or whatever. We'd driven out to Anaheim for it, and Kyle was bouncing at one of the Scottsdale bars, I remember. So he actually drove up on Friday after a shift. So, like, you know, 2 a.m. he drove from Scottsdale to Anaheim, and he's like napping, you know, in the corner of this big gymnasium, or it was a big conference center where they had, you know, a fitness expo and whatnot, but he's just napping there. And and we're like, Kyle, hey what division are you doing? He wasn't even ranked at the time. I don't think he was a blue belt yet even. He's like, oh, I'm gonna do the brown belt. We're like, dude, you know that you're a white belt. He's like, yeah, well, if I'm gonna do this for real, I might as well just jump right in the higher levels. So, you know, and the format of that tournament then was 10 minutes sub only. And if you guys stalemate, you both are out. You're not, there's no EBI overtime or whatnot. So, he jumped right into it, and he had the balls to do it. And I remember he stalled out some high level brown belt, you know, then drove back to Scottsdale. But it was just amazing how he had decided to jump right in and wasn't scared. And other people would be, you know, a little bit hesitant about jumping into a brown belt right away. And the only reason he did brown belt, because they wouldn't let him do black belt.
Well, what else is crazy is that this is public knowledge, so it's not like we're saying anything that people can't find. He was doing a lot of this competing pretty much with no knee.
Yeah. So he had, you know, a substantial knee injury, and I think he was training on and competing on it until today. Mm-hmm. He couldn't. He had to take, you know, a year off to get surgery and to get, you know, rehab. And as soon as good, he went back at it.
Yeah, too. Man, he's a monster. He's got, like, I mean, you can easily, again, people that if you want to look him up, you can find tons of fights of his all over the place against some of the best guys in the world. He's got a instructional that was put out by BJJ Fanatics, who are pretty much right now putting out the most high quality instructionals for jiu-jitsu and wrestling in the world. Pretty much, like, you've been pretty much loyal to two instructors for the most part. Like, you had that little period of time where you were trying to find the right fit. And I mean, I think that that's important. I do think that it's like, I mean, like, I think over time, lots of people sort of find, like, they end up in a relationship where they're friends with people from other schools. And maybe you train with them from time to time, but I think the importance of being, like, loyal to a single instructor can't get overstated enough. And it kind of goes both ways. There has to be trust between you and the instructor both ways. Like, and that's kind of what makes martial arts so interesting, man, is because, like, you know, the trust of the people you're training with is so huge, because, like, we're pretty much playing a game of tag where one of us can get killed or permanently injured.
Yeah, for sure. So I know that one thing Rob had said to me, talking about one of his other students, is that he doesn't mind you training at anywhere else. And this is John too. He says the same thing. But you know, if you're constantly training at other places and not spending enough time at your home gym, he can't correct your mistakes. To be loyal in that sense. And John told me multiple times, he tells everybody, he says, you can go train somewhere else. I don't care, as long as you come back. And when you come back, if you learn something cool, you better show me too. So, you know, you can always learn something else from, you know, a cool technique from somebody else or another school. But at the same time, you have to make sure that you you have someone watching over you so they correct the mistakes. It might be something super small that you don't even think about, but you know, another instructor that's not your main instructor might not even tell you. It's one of those tricks of the trade where they're not going to show you all the little details to make a move work. They'll show you just enough to make you think you get it, but they're not sharing that secret because you're not even their real student.
Yeah. So, just to wrap up our conversation. So one thing I usually do when we have a guest on is I ask them like about an influential book or song or movie. But because we've been friends forever, I kind of want to talk about a person that had a huge influence on both of us wanting to train and us being interested in fighting in general. And a guy who, so you and I briefly started a rash guard company called Fighters DNA. And we had this guy write up our little mission statement. And he's a friend of both of ours. His name's Eugene Robinson. So I kind of wanted to talk about Eugene, man, because I know me personally, man, I don't think I'd be doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu if it wasn't because of him. And he's also a huge influence on me musically, but like, I don't think I'd be training jiu-jitsu if it wasn't for Eugene Robinson. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I feel like we might've found jiu-jitsu eventually, just because I remember the UFC was in its, you know, it was growing and it was getting so popular so quickly, might've gotten into it, but you know, Uncle Eugene, he's definitely active on all things and jiu-jitsu and is one of them too. I know you had shared the book Fight, right? Was it Everything You've Wanted Kicking But Afraid to Get Your Ass Kicked for Asking? It's essentially a coffee table book, but I have on audiobook on my phone, and that's actually things that I listen to before for tournaments. I have my process is that, you know, I listen to a couple different chapters of that and I eat plain oatmeal. Number one, because I fucking hate oatmeal and it's the worst thing in the world to eat and it makes me angry to eat. But at the same time, I'm listening to Eugene talk about fighting, and there's a, you know, he has this great voice that echoes really, you know, echoes in his very, you know, it gets into your soul. I feel like when he's talking, and he does narrate that book, obviously. But there's, you know, the way he describes fighting and some of the stories he shares about it, you know, it kind of calms some fear and gives you a great, through the looking glass approach, in terms of what the background was and how things kind of got started.
Yeah, so man, I remember. So obviously that fight and everything you wanted to know about fighting, but you were afraid you were get your ass kicked for asking, was a huge thing. And we both love Oxbow, which is his main musical project. But then he had a fiction book, A Long Slow Screw, and I remember we went to go see him. And some of this stuff is obviously for the people that are listening. You're probably not going to know what we're talking about, but you can easily find all this stuff. There was a band called High on Fire that was playing Philadelphia that same night. And you and I went to the book reading at a venue in Philadelphia called Kung Fu Necktie, which is just a bar. And I think there was only a couple other people there. And at that point, I don't think we had met Eugene before or had any conversations with him. And I just remember, man, we're there. He's doing a spoken word thing, reading sections of the book. And he has a guy named James Plotkin who plays in some metal bands, one of his most well-known metal bands called Khanate, doing some background stuff while he's doing his narration of the book. But he's kind of ad-libbing sessions of the book as well. And then we just talked to him for like, I don't know, man, maybe like 2 hours afterwards. And right away, just like such a nice guy, very charismatic, but just seemed genuinely interested in like us talking to him. And then we pretty much became friends with him. And then I played with Oxbow at different points. I've had different conversations with him over the years. I'm actually supposed to talk to him in a couple weeks for a podcast on some stuff. But yeah, man, like the whole demeanor and attitude, man, like he brings in his musical performances a lot of the sort of fight stuff, and his approach to fighting is kind of very positive. And like, he's one of the main people that has said over and over again that like this idea that only idiots are interested in training and fighting is one of the like literally stupidest ideas that's been put out there. Like, he's like, most of the people that are interested in this stuff and doing it for real and really are training are some of the most intelligent people you will run into, which I think is a true narrative. But it's like, most people are like, oh man, that stuff is so stupid. It's like, no, it's not stupid. And at different points in your life, you're going to find yourself being forced to fight for something. And it might not even be a physical confrontation, but you're going to have to be forced to fight for something. And if you haven't put in the work to get yourself prepared to do these battles, you're going to lose and you're going to regret it. You know? And I mean, man, that's something that like I've thought of a lot, man. Like, there's times where I'm like, man, I really don't want to do this competition. I'm really not ready, but I got to do it. And I mean, you know, man, I'm not very big. I'm like, sometimes I'm like, man, do I really want to take this super fight at 155 pounds against somebody who's like 12 years younger than me? What would you do? You'd say, screw it, let's do it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean that's such a huge thing.
I'll say that, you know, jiu-jitsu is more than just a physical thing. It's also a mental thing. And that's kind of what helps me in my daily, you know, struggles in terms of working a desk job you really don't like, when you're stuck on a cube or you got someone yelling at you over the phone who has no idea. You know, it's, if you've been in enough, you've done jiu-jitsu long enough, you've been in enough bad positions to where you always know you can work your way out of. So as you kind of take some deep breaths and you think about it, and you're and life is good. You know, there's nothing worse than being, you know, mounted by some dude who weighs 350 when you weigh, you know, 150, and it seems like there's no way out. But you know, it helps yeah, in everyday life too, for sure.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
But one thing, thing I will say, if there's anyone out there who wants to, you know, thinking about getting, but isn't sure how to get started, just find some local gyms. All gyms have at least, like, you know, a one free class policy, or, you know, a week free or 2 weeks free. So, you know, bounce around, try and find the right one. You know, a lot of schools there won't hate you for joining another gym if it's the right fit for you. Some people will look down on you a little bit, but it really, as long as you're still training, that's the big thing. You know, we're all, the whole jiu-jitsu community, you know, isn't filled with hate. I mean, you know, some guys might talk some smack, you know, just to put on a show, but most guys, you know, just want the sport to excel and succeed, and you know, hopefully see it on the bigger stage than where it is now.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so thanks for connecting today during the middle of this coronavirus nightmare. Sure, just about everybody's trapped inside right now. Hopefully it'll be over soon. We'll all get back to training. Yeah, thanks again.
That's right. Take it easy, Rob. All right, later.
Have a good one.